Hello and welcome to this week's recording of the Wallingford and District Talking newspaper. For the news from the 1st of April 2026 edition of the Wallingford Herald. There will only be two main readers this week, Hay and myself, David. I'm also producing this week, and Pete will be the copier for this edition. Despite today's date being April Fool's Day, I can assure you all items are free of prank.
Hello, I'm Kay. The first item from the front page is Town Bids for Culture title, and it has a photograph of some mounted royalists. And inside, Town launches bid to take first ever UK culture title. Wallingford is bidding to become the first ever town of culture in the UK. The Thameside community has formally entered the competition, setting out an ambitious vision to place one of England's most historically complete towns firmly on the national cultural stage. Wallingford is a historic market town whose story stretches from its Saxon origins through the Norman Conquest. It served as a key crossing point for William the Conqueror to a vibrant present-day community reflected in landmarks such as its town hall, built in 1670. The government-led initiative will see towns from across the country compete for the title, alongside a £3 million investment to deliver a year-long programme of cultural activity and long-term development. For Wallingford, the bid is built not just on a calendar of events, but on a deeper proposition. Town where England's story is both visible and actively lived, and where culture is shaped as much by community participation as by performance. Matt Gleave, Events and Communications Manager at Wallingford Town Council, said, "Wallingford has an extraordinary cultural story to tell. From its Saxon origins and Norman significance to its thriving present-day community, culture here isn't something that happens occasionally. It's part of everyday life. What makes Wallingford distinctive is the way heritage, creativity, and community come together. This bid allows us to share more confidently and invite others to experience it. The proposed programme under the working title Small Town Big Stories will focus on revealing and connecting the layers of Wallingford's past and present, combining heritage, arts, storytelling and community-led activity. It aims to animate the entire town, from its historic streets and green spaces to the riverside and surrounding landscape. While larger destinations often dominate the cultural conversation, Wallingford's bid highlights the unique role that smaller towns play in shaping national identity. With its Saxon street patterns still intact, its royal charter dating from 1155, and a strong tradition of civic life that continues today, the town offers both authenticity and continuity. The bid will also build on existing partnerships across the town, working with local organisations, volunteers, schools and creative groups to ensure the programme is both inclusive and locally rooted. If successful, the Town of Culture designation would support a step change in Wallingford's cultural offer, helping to develop new audiences, strengthen the local economy, and position the town more prominently within the UK's cultural landscape. Further details about the bid and opportunities to get involved will be shared in the coming months, says Wallingford Town Council.
Hello, this is David. Another item from the front page. Pub says cheers to award success. And inside, Pub named winner of two regional gongs. The Wallingford pub has been named the branch winner of two awards by South Oxfordshire Camera, celebrated as both Pub of the Year and Cider Pub of the Year for the region. The Campaign for Real Ale in Oxfordshire has named its branch winners in each of the districts of awards, including Pub of the Year, ahead of the competition for the overall winner. For the second time, Wallingford High Street Pub Cross Keys has been named in the coveted awards. Dave Howes, joint landlord with his wife Emma, said, "It's an amazing award. It's the second time that we've done it, and we managed to go through last year to win the title of the whole of Oxfordshire. So we'll see if we can do it again this year." In the same week of the announcements, the Cross Keys parent group of taverns, also run by Mr. and Mrs. Howes, was awarded the accolade of Community Pub Group of the Year at the prestigious Republican Awards. "It's been a good week," Mr. Howes added. The original home of Plunkfest and a dedicated year-round host of community music and beer-led events, the Cross Keys is a local favourite in the town. And the article has been accompanied by a couple of photos of landlord and landlady, Mr. and Mrs. Rouse, and in particular one of them with their pet dog.
Another front page item. Thames Water vows to clean up worst site for illegal spills. Thames Water has vowed to upgrade a sewage treatment site near Wallingford after it was claimed to have the most illegal spills in the company's network. Peter Hammond of Channel 4 docuseries Dirty Business Frame found that the South Morton sewage treatment work site between Wallingford and Didcot was the worst. The professor's findings, which he says is based on Thames Water's own data, uncovered 287 illegal spills between 2021 and 2025, more than any other site within the utilities network. Thames Water said a planned upgrade for the South Morton site will improve its ability to treat the volumes of incoming sewage, reducing the need for untreated discharges in wet weather. The scheme, which is still being designed, is due to complete in 2026, and it's anticipated that this location will meet all government targets for storm overflows by 2040 to 45. Wallingford Town Councillor Mike Ackerman is leading a campaign to restore the Mill Brook, a stream which South Morton runs into. He described the discharge into the Mill Brook as awful and unacceptable, reflecting a lot of investment from Thames Water. Mr. Ackerman said, "Downstream in Wallingford, we have the added problem that the Mill Brook has been engineered repeatedly over the past 50 years. Water flow has been redirected, and the channel upstream of the bypass road has become blocked with silt due to lack of management." James Barlow, Green County and South Oxfordshire Councillor for Wallingford, said, "Residents of South Morton, North Morton and Aston Tirrold are paying for a service, sewage treatment, that most of the time they are not receiving." He added, "The government must come clean about the real costs of privatisation and put water back into public ownership. 90% of countries have publicly owned water. Privatisation has failed the British people, and our waterways, cleaner, cheaper and fairer alternatives are out there." Hessa Fayers, Director of Waste and Biosources of Thames Water, said, "Recent data shows discharge events were around three times lower than the previous year, with shorter spill durations. Although this is in part due to reduced rainfall in 2025, we are encouraged that we are seeing early signs of progress from the operational and capital investment we have been making," she said. "Transparency is at the heart of what we do, And in January 2023, we were the first water company to publish a real-time EDM data map on our website before it became a legal requirement to do so. He said the infrastructure needs significant investment and that over the next 5 years, Thames Water will deliver its biggest upgrade to the wastewater network in 150 years. And there is a photograph of the campaigners by the Millbrook, some of which are holding their noses, and they have their signs, "Keep sewage out of our brook, clean up our stream, boo to poo," and a few others.
A further item from the front page, drug dealer hid heroin and crack in deodorant cans. A drug dealer who hid heroin and crack cocaine in deodorant canisters has been given a lengthy prison sentence. Daniel Carruthers of Blue Mountains, Wallingford, was sentenced at Oxford Crown Court on Thursday of last week. The 34-year-old was found guilty at a trial last year of possession with intent to supply two Class A drugs, namely heroin and crack cocaine. It related to an incident when police found drugs at an address in Northfield Road, Headington, on May the 29th last year. During the trial, the jury heard Carruthers had been staying at the address with a woman called Sonia Raj. Police attended the address over an unrelated matter and saw Carruthers and Ms. Raj crawling on the bedroom floor, the court heard. Officers entered through a window and searched the bedroom. They emptied deodorant canisters and inside found a large plastic wrap. It contained between 100 and 150 smaller wraps of white and dark powder. Samples were tested and came back positive for crack cocaine and heroin. The jury heard the amount of drugs found was consistent with drug dealing. No drugs were found in the defendant's canister. A gold tooth was found in a bag in the bedroom and a lock knife was found in the living room, the jury heard. Carruthers was arrested and provided a prepared statement. He denied any knowledge of the drugs found at the property. The jury was shown body-worn footage from a police officer who searched the bedroom at the address. It showed two roll-on deodorant canisters with wraps being prized out of them. The wraps could be seen being put into the evidence bag by the police officer. The canisters were described to the jury as being pure men's brand deodorant. Carruthers was also sentenced for one count of assault causing actual bodily harm, possession of an offensive weapon in a private place, namely a zombie knife, and being in possession of cocaine and cannabis. He pleaded guilty to these offences, which were committed in London on April the 18th, 2022. The court heard he punched his victim in the stomach and dragged him down a road. Judge Hassam Khan told the court about a letter Carruthers had written. The judge said he distances himself from the verdicts of the jury. He maintains the drugs didn't belong to him. He failed to acknowledge that his DNA was found on the drugs. This is his third supply conviction. Carruthers was jailed for a total of 8 years and orders were made for the forfeiture and destruction of the drugs and the phone found. This is the final item from the front page, and it's refused retirement village plan is thrown out on appeal. Plans for what was described as a retirement village in Benson, which were hotly contested by the parish council, have been dismissed at appeal. Scheme for 40 new homes for people aged over 55 in the countryside in Benson off Braes Lane adjacent to the orchard was put forward by Beechcroft Development Limited in October 2024. It was refused by South Oxfordshire District Council last September, but the developer appealed the decision to the Planning Inspectorate. Public inquiry was held in February, and in his decision, published on March 23rd, the Planning Inspector dismissed the house builder appeal. It is the third time Beechcroft has appealed plans for new homes on the same site, each of them quashed by the inspectorate. This time it was concluded that the scheme would fail because the housing was not allocated to Benson, the scheme would interrupt the village's green buffer and would cause visual harm to the countryside setting, and wouldn't offer residents acceptable access to the village centre or to public transport. The inquiry heard that although the district cannot demonstrate a sufficient five-year housing supply and the need for elderly people's housing is significantly more acute, Benson has already taken on 831 homes in its neighbourhood plan, significantly more than the 440 required for the large village. The inspector said, whilst these figures are not to be regarded as a cap on future supply, they reflect the positive engagement of the local community through the planning process. Benson's neighbourhood plan, which was approved in 2018, accepted more housing development than was required for the area on the condition that it would be confined to the northern arch of the town and not interrupt a visible green buffer between the village and the countryside. The retirement village proposed disregards both of those policies, and the plan received nearly 150 objections from villagers during the consultation process. A spokesman for Benson Parish Council, which submitted objections at the appeal, said the planning inspector found that the development conflicted with both the Benson Neighbourhood Plan and South Oxfordshire District Council's local plan. Key concerns identified in the decision included the significant visual impact of the scheme, the encroachment into Benson's carefully planned green buffer, and the development's failure to provide adequate sustainable access for future residents, such as safe walking and cycle routes. The inspector's decision reinforces the strength and importance of Benson's neighbourhood plan in safeguarding the character and the setting of the village.
Women in town enjoy community arts project. People in Didcot have been gathering in a community space to work on a number of different art projects. Parkway Arts in Station Road is a community arts studio close to Didcot Parkway train station, which offers pottery, mosaics, stained glass, and creative courses. Those taking part in community classes have been modelling sculptures out of clay, including models of mice. Lots of different classes are available at the Pottery, Crafts and Art Studio. Artist Jenny Dawson has been running the art space since 2024. The studio says, "We currently offer not only hand building, but also silver metal clay courses and mosaic workshops, with even more crafts and classes planned. Studio memberships are also available for those ready to take their practice further." Frank Dumbleton is a volunteer at Didcot Railway Centre, close to Didcot Parkway, and a local photographer. He visited the Art Centre to take a series of photos of women taking part in the community classes. And we have one of Frank's photographs, and it's of Zoe, Rosie, and Betsy, and they're all holding up their clay models of mice.
Billionaire must wait for verdict of new estate. Larry Ellison has been forced to wait to hear the verdict of his new Oxfordshire estate. The billionaire, who is allegedly worth something like £180 billion, has been gradually buying land and neighbouring homes at Fifield Wick near Kingston Vacuies, close to Abingdon. His aim is to create a huge estate where he plans to build guest lodges, housing for around 20 living staff, several gyms, an indoor basketball court, and a large horse stables. The planning application was submitted by Josie UK LLC, a company linked to the Ellison Foundation, in December last year. Vale of Whitehorse District Council has been deciding the plans, which were due to be decided by the middle of March, but has now been pushed back to April 9th. No reason has been given, although revised documents were submitted to the local authority on March the 17th, which planning officers would need to go through. The revised documents suggest the work will not be done in one, but will be constructed through a phased approach. As reported in January, Mr. Ellison has been upsetting his new neighbours, who said the secretive work is very frustrating due to the scale and the disruption being caused. One anonymous neighbour told the Daily Mail, "He angers neighbours with security guards that now walk around the perimeter of the property every hour with dogs."
Decision on Council's future set for July. Public feedback has been gathered on government proposals that could reshape the future of local government. Consultation on local government reorganisation for Oxfordshire and West Berkshire closed on March 26th, with a decision expected in July. Among the proposals is a two-unitary council model, supported by South Oxfordshire District Council, Vale of Whitehorse District Council, Cherwell, West Oxfordshire and West Berkshire Council. Berthia Thomas, leader of Vale of Whitehorse District Council, said, "As the consultation draws to a close, I'd like to thank everyone who came along to our recent events to find out more, and to everyone who has taken the time to feedback to the government. We submitted our response to the consultation with a robust argument that the two unitary councils is the best option and the right choice. This is truly a once-in-a-generation opportunity, and we have carefully thought about and evidenced what will truly deliver for our communities both now and in the future." Maggie Filipova-Rivers, lead of South Oxfordshire District Council, said, "I'm proud of the work we've put in. Alongside our partner councils on the two unitary council proposal, and I believe we have put forward a good case to the government for why this is the best option." Arrests at town Mackies as boiler thieves caught. Pair of suspected boiler robbers were arrested mid-meal at a branch of McDonald's. Thames Valley Police said they caught two suspected thieves at the McDonald's at Milton Interchange, grabbing a cheeky post-theft bite to eat. The Forces Police Community Support Officers, PCSOs, had previously been informed that the duo were allegedly taking boilers from a development in Wantage, with the service publicity praising the actions of its officers. Spokesperson said, "If you ever needed proof that our PCSOs are the fountain of local knowledge, the walking, talking eyes and ears of our patch, then buckle up for this one." On March the 19th, two individuals were spotted helping themselves to boilers from a new development in Wantage. Not exactly the kind of hot property we like to see. Our brilliant PCSOs jumped straight into action, using their local know-how to predict the escape route, and guess what? They were bang on. They soon found the suspect vehicle parked up at McDonald's on Milton Interchange, grabbing a cheeky post-theft bite to eat. They quietly sat up on the car and guided other officers in. One of the two suspects tried to make a run for it, only for a PCSO to step in.
MPs warning on growth plan for Ox Cam Corridor. County MPs have warned that growth must be community-led and not taken away by central government, following the announcement of the Chancellor's plans to establish a Silicon Valley-style zone, including southern Oxfordshire. Rachel Reeves, the Oxford to Cambridge Growth Corridor, to unleash the potential of our science and technology powerhouses. The 2012 Olympic-style regeneration of the Tech Corridor, which incorporates Bicester and the surrounding area, will be led by the Greater Oxford Development Corporation and the Development Corporation for Cambridge, which started earlier this year. Cash to buy land and build infrastructure will be doubled to £800 million to transform the shared region into the UK's answer to Silicon Valley. Plans include providing more than £500 million for transport in Oxford, fast-tracking new reservoirs in Oxfordshire, and investing £2.5 billion in the East-West Rail Link. A joint statement was released by Oxfordshire MPs, including Callum Miller, Ollie Glover, Freddie van Mierlo, Charlie Maynard, and Leila Moran. They warned that ministers must not remove local planning powers before Oxfordshire's reorganisation ends, stressing that growth must be led by communities, not imposed from Whitehall. They said, ministers must not create a democratic deficit by stripping planning and infrastructure powers away from the locally elected representatives and pushing ahead before Oxfordshire's local government reorganisation consultation has even closed. Growth will only succeed if it is done with communities, not imposed on them from Whitehall. The county can drive national growth, but Oxfordshire leaders warn that infrastructure and public services lag behind development. They said, Oxfordshire is home to outstanding businesses, research institutions and innovators with the potential to drive growth across our county and country. We are ready to work with the government, but ministers must recognise that infrastructure and public services have too often fallen behind development. Balanced growth is needed in Oxfordshire with more affordable housing, proper infrastructure, and scrutiny of Thames Water reservoir plans. They said, what we need now is balanced growth that works for communities across Oxfordshire as well as for the national economy. That means tackling the shortage of affordable housing, answering serious questions about Thames Water's proposed reservoir, and ensuring local infrastructure can keep pace. Councillor Susan Brown, leader of Oxford City Council, said the Chancellor's announcement has the potential to be a game changer for the city, council, for the city, county and country. She said, the Development Corporation would likely be needed to help deliver the 40,000 homes and 12 million square foot of commercial space we are proposing as part of the new Greater Oxfordshire County Council. Having shared goals and objectives with local government, it is key, and I believe our plan to create a Greater Oxford Council is the only way to provide a future development corporation with an aligned local government partner.
Plan to connect water mains to development. Thames Water has put forward initial plans to connect water mains to the Didcot Valley Park development in a major project spanning two Oxfordshire districts. The water company has submitted an environmental impact assessment screening option to both South Oxfordshire and Vale of Whitehorse District Councils for the development of the Didcot Valley Park trunk main. It proposes a new pipe 4.7 kilometres in length to connect Hagbourne Hill Service Reservoir with the existing Steventon Diversion Main at a point just south of the A4130. 1 kilometre of the southern part of the underground water main will be in the South Oxfordshire district, with the remaining 3.7 in the Vale of Wight Horse District Council area. Lidcote Valley Park development, being built by Persimmon Homes, will result in a total of 4,250 new homes, along with local centres, schools, community and leisure facilities, open space and green infrastructure in the west of Didcot. Agent Stantec submitted initial documents to the councils on behalf of the applicant Thames Water Utilities Limited for the new main, which said the provision of drinking water to the large-scale development will require modification to the existing clean water supply network.
Soldier saves diner's life with CPR. A soldier stepped in to resuscitate a diner after he choked on a mouthful of chicken at a restaurant and collapsed outside. Retired gardener Harry Stoopman was enjoying a meal with Penny Clover at Charbatai in High Street, Abingdon, on Saturday night when he started to choke on his food. He rushed outside to try and get his breath back, but his airways were still blocked and he lost consciousness. Mark Smith, a soldier based at Dalton Barracks, spotted what was happening from the Tipsy Mercer bar next door and rushed outside to help. The regimental sergeant major performed CPR, a life-saving technique used during cardiac arrest, and after several minutes of chest compressions, Mr. Stoopman started to breathe again. There is no question in my mind that if Mark had not been there, it would have been game over, said Mr. Stoopman, who was reunited with Mr. Smith for a beer at the Royal British Legion in Spring Road on Wednesday. The former RAF assistant air traffic controller added, "There is no doubt that I entirely owe my life to Mark for his swift intervention." The 66-year-old and his wife Penny, a town councillor, are now urging people to take first aid courses so they know how to perform CPR and other life-saving techniques. Mr. Stoopman added, "I have a medical condition that can make swallowing difficult, and I started to choke on my food. I decided to go outside, but I just could not breathe, and the next thing I remember was in the ambulance." We would like to stress that the restaurant is not at fault in any way. With my condition, I need to stick to eating softer foods. We want to get the message out there that as many people as possible should take a first aid course if they can and learn the life-saving technique like CPR. Dad of three, Mr. Smith, who has now left 4 Regiment of the Royal Logistic Corps at Barracks, after being appointed a captain at 11 Explosives Ordnance Disposal and Search Regiment in Didcot, was with wife Rachel when the emergency happened. An ambulance was called while Mr. Smith carried out CPR. He said, "Harry was unresponsive. He was blue in the face. I felt his neck and there was no pulse. I was trained to do CPR in the army. I did 4 rounds of 60 seconds each for about 4 minutes, and then people with us were saying he's coming back. Paramedics, who arrived within minutes of being called, took Mr. Stoopman to the John Radcliffe Hospital, and he was allowed to go home in the early hours. First aid courses are available across Oxfordshire, offering both public and workplace training, including Oxfordshire First Aid in Witney, St John's Ambulance in Kidlington, and Safe Haven Training in Oxford. British Red Cross also offers first aid training courses at the Hilton Garden Inn in Abingdon.
Revealed solar farm plan for Science Hub. New solar farm plans for the UK's leading science and innovation hub at Harwell Campus have been revealed. An initial proposal for a large new solar panel array, has been put forward to the Vale of Whitehorse District Council by the Science Technology Facilities Council and EDF Power Solutions. The Environmental Impact Assessment Screening Report has indicated plans for a 15 MW solar panel array on a field at the Rutherford Appleton Laboratory site on Harwell campus, which is south of East Hendred and southwest of Didcot, west of the A34. It is anticipated the panels would be operating for around 35 years and will offset 3,250 tonnes of CO2 every year. Solar panels would be ground-mounted in rows in a 25-hectare field, around 12.5 hectares, of which would be for the 3-metre-high solo photovoltaic panels. Sorry about that. The proposed development also includes ancillary infrastructure, such as inverters mounted behind the panels and transformers and an access track. The applicant said an extensive planting scheme of trees, hedgerow and grassland would screen views from public rights of way, provide enhanced wildlife habitat and enhance the national landscape. The developers hosted a public exhibition introducing the proposal on March the 12th, inviting locals to hear about the plans and speak to the project team. A statement from developers said, "As an organisation whose operations and facilities are energy intensive and recognising the impact of climate change, Science Technology Facilities Council is conscious of the need to reduce emissions. Having installed PV solar panel arrays on existing building roofs and car parks, the Science Technology Facilities Council now proposes a dedicated off-site PV solar array, which will make a substantial reduction on their emissions and also reduce the overall cost of electricity to the organisation. The Vale of Whitehorse planning officers established that no environmental impact assessment will be required for the development and a planning application is expected to follow. Officers said in a planning statement, "Having regard to the characteristics of the development, it is not considered that there is potential for significant environmental effects. All issues are considered to be of local significance only and can be examined through the normal planning process." The applicant said all construction traffic would be diverted through the Harwell campus to prevent disruption on the roads. The applicant added, "The proposed solar array has been determined to be a viable, sustainable and achievable way to help deliver the current energy requirements of Science Technology Facilities Council and to support growth and development."
Booking system hits tip numbers. Use of county tips has plummeted since the County Council introduced a new booking system. Alcoton Tip near Banbury is down 48% from February last year. Ardingley Fields near Bicester is down 32%. Drayton near Abingdon is down 38%. Oakley Wood near Wallingford is down 35%. And Redbridge in Oxford is down 28%. Conservative group leader Liam Walker told Oxfordshire County Councillors that bureaucracy was to blame for this. The new booking system was introduced by the Liberal Democrat administration in mid-January, and around 26% of people who visit the tips are not booking in advance. A motion by Conservative Councillor Lee Evans calling for a rethink on the new booking system was rejected. He said Oxfordshire County Council has consistently performed for 11 years as the best for tips across the country, but he accused the current administration of risking that reputation with the unnecessary and unwanted rules for using the tip. We've become a council that you need to fill in a 5-page booking form just to take a bag of leaves to the tip, he said, while describing it as farcical. Mr. Walker, leader of Oxfordshire Alliance, said the new rules suggest the council doesn't trust residents who are being managed, monitored, and given permission to use the tip. He said the changes add bureaucracy, create barriers, and send entirely the wrong message to residents. He added, residents are increasingly fed up of having to ask this Lib Dem administration for permission to go about their daily lives. You need a permit to get into this city. You need to create the criteria to drive down certain high street roads. Turn around the wrong way at a junction, you're fined. Try to park to support a local business, you're hit with ever-increasing parking charges. And now, unbelievably, you can't even dispose of your own household waste without proving who you are and booking permission to do so at a specific time. But Liberal Democrat Rebecca Fletcher questioned the timing of the debate and said it should be returned to council when there is evidence and not just vibes. Cabinet Member for Place, Environment and Climate Action, Judy Roberts, said, we have all seen comments on social media, but that is not evidence. Public have not raised any concern about the difficulties of providing personal information, such as proof of an address to book a slot, she added. Ms. Roberts said that the number of visits to the tips does not always tell the whole story. Mr. Evans' motion was outvoted and rejected.
Pub firm raises glass to best operator going. An Oxfordshire company has won the award of best community pub operator at a major industry awards. Oak Taverns, based in Tame, stood out to the judges for its work on 12 different pubs across the county. The accolade marks a significant milestone for the businesses and highlights the continued success of its community-focused approach to pub ownership and management, officials say. The awards ceremony took place at Evolution London and was hosted by television personality Rylan Clark, adding extra excitement to what provided to be a memorable evening for all involved. The achievement follows an extensive and competitive judging process, which included official visits to Oak Taverns pubs across Oxfordshire. During these visits, judges examined the company's long-term commitment to revitalising pubs in local communities, including taking on closed sites, investing heavily in refurbishments, and recruiting exceptional managers to lead each venue. Our focus has always been on strengthening pubs within their communities, said Oak Tavern spokesman. We invest not just in buildings, but in people, and seeing formerly closed pubs now thriving is something we're incredibly proud of. Free bus travel offer extended. Oxford's Park and Ride bus discount travel scheme has been extended until at least the end of May. The scheme, first introduced last October, offers free return bus journeys for up to 2 adults and 3 children per parking ticket at one of Oxford's 5 park and ride sites. It is part of a wider transport initiative linked to Oxfordshire County Council's temporary congestion charge and supported by Oxford Bus Company. Luke Marion, Managing Director of Oxford Bus Company and Thames Travel, said, this is great news for bus passengers across Oxfordshire. It continues to make bus travel accessible, sustainable, and reliable. And the next item also concerns with travel, so we've linked the two. Taxi card payments. Taxis could soon be required to accept card payments under new licensing plans. South Oxfordshire and Vale of Whitehorse District Councils are consulting on proposed updates to their joint taxi licensing policy, which include a mandatory requirement for card and mobile payment options in all licensed vehicles. Officers will now review all feedback.
Family fun activities to enjoy over Easter. Families can enjoy free and low-cost events throughout the Easter break. South Oxfordshire and the Vale of Whitehorse will host a packed schedule of activities, with events running until April the 11th, offering something for all ages across both districts. The holidays begin with an activity morning in Cholsey and an afternoon session at the junction in Abingdon. Other highlights include Born to Move fun fitness classes in Wallingford, a football day in Farringdon, and an Easter-themed Explorer Challenge in Botley. In the second week, more fun awaits with an Explorer session and mini fun day in Didcot and a free fun day at Tame Leisure Centre. The programme concludes with an open day at the junction in Abingdon, featuring crafts, soft play and New Age curling. Councillor Helen Pighills, Cabinet Member for the Community Health and Wellbeing at Vale of Whitehorse District Council, said, This Easter we have plenty for kids and families to enjoy with activities for everyone. Whether it's getting creative with workshops and family theatre at the Beacon, enjoying the fresh air with outdoor challenges, or coming along to free family fun day and with everything free or low cost, they're a brilliant way to make the most of the school holidays.
Alan Johnson shares life story in stage show. Senior political figure is set to take centre stage for an evening of stories from a life shaped by Parliament and pop music. Former Home Secretary Alan Johnson will bring The Beatles, Harold Wilson and Me, Evening with Alan Johnson to the Kenton Theatre, Henley-on-Thames on Thursday, April the 16th. Audiences will be taken on a personal journey from his childhood in a West London slum, the high office in the UK government, alongside an endearing love of music and an early dream of becoming a pop star. The evening will explore how Mr. Johnson's life was influenced by both the Beatles and his political hero, Harold Wilson. Mr. Johnson said, "The 60s was an historic decade. If you lived through it, this could be an evening of nostalgia. If you didn't, it could be an evening of discovery. Either way, there will be music and humour with a smattering of social history." Presented in two parts, the first half of the show will take the form of an In Conversation With segment, using music clips to prompt discussion, while the second half will open the floor to audience questions. The live tour is presented by Cloud9 Management. Celebrity police horse to enjoy retirement as eye removed. Police horse is set to enjoy her retirement and a life of relaxation after having her eye removed due to a medical issue. Thames Valley police horse Luna became a bit of a celebrity last year when she appeared at Royal Ascot wearing custom horse sunglasses. They were required to protect her eyes from a case of recurrent equine uveitis, which also meant she had to wear a UV-resistant fly mask, and has now resulted in the loss of one of her eyes. Thames Valley Police said Luna is soon off to join Atlas in retirement at the Horses Trust, and we have been steadily decreasing her workload, which has now ended, and getting her ready for a life of relaxation. Luna became a bit of a celebrity last year when she rocked up at Royal Ascot wearing her custom shades. Although she looked very elegant in them, these were made due to her having equine recurrent uveitis, which also meant her wearing a UV-resistant fly mask too. Despite having an implant, eye drops, and other proactive measures, she was always sadly going to lose sight in one eye. We therefore, in consultation with our vet and the Horses Trust, decided it was the right time to call in a specialist and have the eye removed, which we are pleased to announce was a complete success, and she's doing extremely well.
This item appeared in last week's edition of the Henley Standard, dated the 27th of March. Celebration of Chalk Stream with Appeal for Young Help. About 70 residents gathered at the village hall in Ewelme to celebrate the chalk stream and crest beds. There was a three-round quiz and a cappella group Shiraz, led by organiser Andrea Powell, also performed for guests. A small exhibition was set up by David Solomon, the chair of the Friends of the Ewelme Watercress Beds. There were information boards, images of crest bed projects, maps of the beds, and a short history book on the local chalk stream. Visitors were served food and drink, and there was also a raffle. A total of £1,200 was raised to go towards the maintenance and management of the crest beds and the associated nature reserve. Mr. Solomon, who lives in Ewelme and is a retired freshwater biologist, has been involved with the annual fundraiser for 6 years. He said, "We put this event on every year. What is different is thinking about the theme for the exhibition that we want to cover. Previously, we've had one on the art of the crest beds, one on the history of the working crest beds, and now we have the brook and a little about the River Thames." It was fantastic to see the village hall packed. But if you look around at the average age here, it is not school children. We want to encourage more young people to join in. We hold our annual Children's Day event at the Crest Beds, which usually works well, but we want more young people involved because they are the custodians of this resource in the future. A 12-minute film made by Martha Glennon, 26, entitled Not Born Yesterday, born spelled B-O-U-R-N-E, Stories of Chalk Streams, was screened to guests. She said, "It's so important to give back to the committees who fed into our programme. Sorry, the communities who fed into our programme." David Solomon, who authored the book about the Ewelme Brook and featured in our film, has been so brilliant with helping us. We wanted to come back and present to the Friends of the Ewelme Watercress Beds, which does such extraordinary work to protect this chalk stream and to protect that heritage. We need more people advocating for rivers. We all know the dire state that chalk streams are in. There are so many threats, and we need people who will advocate for them and look after them. We need those local champions. The Friends of the Ewelme Watercress Beds are a really good example of a community initiative of citizen scientists who are getting into the river and doing fly sampling, for example. They're looking for brown trout. They're monitoring the health of their local river. But they're also celebrating the long history of its life and its heritage. Lord Michael Jay of Ewelme attended the fundraiser with his wife, Lady Sylvia Jay. He sits on the Environment Committee in the House of Lords and is a big supporter of the crest beds. "It's good to be here," Lord Jay said. "I'm very much a supporter of anybody who can draw attention to the chalk streams and make the people who live in the towns and villages nearby feel that the chalk streams are part of their life and always have been. I think that's a really important thing which the group here is doing." I thought the film was absolutely excellent. and it's good that David Solomon and other members of the UOM community were playing such a prominent part in it, because the chalk stream is so important to me. We live just opposite the pond in the village, and the stream runs down the side of the road, so we're conscious of it every single day. I think this is the sort of events which the Green Party and the Liberal Democrats are very, very good at organising. There are a lot of people here and in the neighbouring areas who are really interested in the chalk stream, and it's great to have this kind of evening. As Powell said, the evening was a great success. The feedback has been very positive. The varied activities were popular, particularly the excellent film from the Not Born Yesterday team. It was lovely to see so many people from the village, and beyond all, enjoying convivial chat, good food, and great entertainment. I would particularly like to thank those who contributed raffle prizes, to Sue and David Cooper, who ran the bar, and to Yvonne Solomon, Stevenson, and Susan Horner, who prepared all the food, served it up, and then cleared up afterwards.
Charity leader honoured at special castle reception. Charity leader has been honoured for her work supporting young carers in the meeting with the King. Sabian North, CEO of Oxfordshire-based Be Free Young Carers, met King Charles and Queen Camilla at a Windsor Castle reception. The event was held in recognition of the country's 5.8 million unpaid carers. Ms. North spoke to the royal couple about the work of Be Free Young Carers based in Harwell, near Didcot, which supports 750 young carers across the county annually through recreational, emotional, and social support. She also raised concerns about how a lack of support for children with special educational needs and disabilities is forcing younger siblings to take on additional caring responsibilities. Ms. North said, "Being a young carer is the ultimate responsibility. It is entirely selfless, and often a young person has no choice but to put their own concerns and time for development to one side so they can care for a loved one." Recent research from Carers Trust found that young carers miss an average of 23 days of school each year, 60% more than their peers. They are also 33% more likely to fall behind in reading, writing, and maths between the ages of 5 and 11. Ms. North said fewer than half of young carers achieve 5 GCSE passes, which is a clear marker of how the responsibility of being a young carer negatively impacts a person's future prospects. To be invited by Their Majesties to Windsor Castle to shine a light on this was a personal privilege and honour on behalf of our hard-working team. Both the King and Queen spoke passionately about the critical role young carers have in society and how such stories of love, care and compassion can provide an example and inspiration to us all. During the event, Ms. North also spoke with Prime Minister Sikia Starmer and Liberal Democrat leader Sir Ed Davey, both of whom were young carers themselves. TV presenter Kate Garraway also attended and shared how caring for her late husband impacted her own children. The reception took place just before the government released its latest white paper on planned reforms to the schools and SEND systems.
This article comes from The Bridge, and it's a history of the WI, the Women's Institute. The first branch of the Women's Institute was established at Stony Plain, Ontario, Canada, in 1897. The movement spread across Canada and around the world. A woman named Madge Watt introduced WI into Great Britain when she returned to her homeland after living for some time in British Columbia. The first meeting in the UK was held on the 16th of September 1915 in Llanfair Pool in Anglesey, Wales, shortly followed by the first English meeting in the Fox Goes Free pub in Charlton, West Sussex. Details of this first meeting can be found in the Weald and Downlands Museum near Chichester, better known as the home of the repair shop. Originally, the WI was associated with the suffragette movement and encouraged women in rural communities to help produce food during World War I. The suffragette anthem, Jerusalem, was used at the first WI AGM in 1924, and so the slogan Jam and Jerusalem still seems to be associated with the WI today. During the last 100 years, the WI has grown to be the biggest women's organisation in the UK, most importantly allowing new friendships to be made, especially in rural areas, and giving women the opportunity to learn new skills and gather knowledge on a wide number of subjects. The WI has had influence in many campaigns such as Keep Britain Tidy, Recycle Waste, HIV and AIDS Awareness, and the Fair Trade Foundation, to name but a few. This tradition continues with members currently voting on which resolution to support in 2026. In Oxfordshire, WI institutes are now taking on new names to reflect their individual identity. We decided to call our institute the Nutters as a tribute to the walnut tree orchard grown in this area, and may also reflect some of our members who have supported the CH and WI for so many years. That CH is Clifton Hampden, and the other area is Burcott. This branch was formed in March 1946, so this is our 80th anniversary, and we look forward to celebrating this at our March meeting in Clifton Hampden Village Hall at 7:30 p.m, when we hope to welcome anyone who may be interested in joining us. The WI is for women from all walks of life. Although the education component is important, it is the friendships that keep women coming back. And that was written by Carol Rook, who's the treasurer of the Clifton Hampden and Burcott Women's Institute, also known as the Nutters. This is an extract from the Chiltern Society magazine. Our region has played host to many distinguished visitors, writes Peter Morgan. The Chilterns have a long history of English monarchs visiting over many centuries, with cases documented from Saxon times to the present day. What is less well known, however, is that many state leaders from other countries have lived or made visits to our area for many diverse reasons. Unless King Canute, later King of Denmark and Norway, as well as England, entered the Chilterns in 1015 or soon after, the first visit by a leader of an overseas state was in 1066 by William, Duke of Normandy. He was leader of an autonomous dukedom, albeit nominally within the Kingdom of France. Many believe William secured the English crown at the Battle of Hastings on the 14th of October 1066, but that wasn't the case. The Saxons didn't allow him to cross London Bridge and so enter the city of London, and declared Edgar Atheling as the new king following Harold's death, and not William the Conqueror. William therefore marched west of London to the nearest crossing point of the Thames at Wallingford, and then through the Chiltern Hills to Berkhamsted. All the way from Hastings to Berkhamsted, William had been causing destruction, killing locals, and destroying food and crops, as a warning of what would happen if he wasn't given the crown. Seeing their position was untenable, Edgar, along with earls and archbishops, travelled to Berkhamsted and surrendered. Only at this point could William declare himself King of England, being crowned formally at Westminster Abbey on Christmas Day 1066. And look out for next year, which is the 1000th anniversary of William's birth, when Wallingford will feature in various commemorations and ceremonies to mark his crossing of the Thames.
Finally, this week, before we say goodbye, we're leaving you with one or two thoughts that were passed to us about where we are in the green revolution of things, and it's entitled, How True Is All This? In line at the store, the checkout girl told an older man that he should bring his own grocery bags, because plastic bags weren't good for the environment. The man apologised to her and explained, We didn't have the green thing back in my day. The girl responded, That's our problem today. Your generation didn't care enough to save our environment. She was right. Our generation didn't have the green thing in its day. Then we returned milk bottles, soft drink bottles, and beer bottles to the store. The store sent them back to the factory to be washed and sterilized and refilled, so it could use the same bottles over and over. So they really were recycled. But we didn't have the green thing back in our day.
We walked upstairs because we didn't have an escalator in every store and office building. We walked to the grocery store and didn't climb into a 300 horsepower motor vehicle every time we had to go two blocks. But she was right. We didn't have the green thing in our day.
Back then, we washed the baby's nappies because we didn't have the throwaway kind. We dried clothes on a line, not in an energy-gobbling machine burning up 240 volts. Wind and solar power really did dry the clothes. Kids got hand-me-down clothes from their brothers or sisters, not always brand new clothing. But the girl is right. We didn't have the green thing back in our day.
Back then, we had one TV or radio in the house, not a TV in every room. And the TV had a small screen the size of a handkerchief. Remember them? Not a screen the size of the state of Queensland. In the kitchen, we blended and stirred by hand because we didn't have electric machines to do everything for us. When we packaged a fragile item to send in the mail, we used a wadded-up old newspaper to cushion it, not styrofoam or plastic bubble wrap. Back then, we didn't fire up an engine and burn gasoline just to cut the lawn. We used a push mower that ran on human power. We exercised by working, so we didn't need to go to a health club to run on treadmills that operate on electricity. But she's right. We didn't have the green thing back then.
We drank from a bubbler fountain when we were thirsty instead of using a cup or plastic bottle every time we had a drink of water. We refilled writing pens with ink instead of buying a new pen. And we replaced the razor blades in a razor instead of throwing away the whole razor just because the blade got blunt. But we didn't have the green thing back then.
Back then, people took the tram or a bus, and kids rode their bikes to school or walked instead of turning their mums into a 24-hour taxi service. We had one PowerPoint in a room, not an entire bank of sockets to power a dozen appliances. And we didn't need a computerized gadget to receive a signal beamed from satellites 2,000 miles out in space in order to find the nearest pizza place.
But isn't it sad the current generation laments how wasteful we old folks were just because we didn't have the green thing back then? So with those thoughts, we're at the end of this week's recording of the Wallingford and District Talking newspaper. But before we go, I'd just like to say thanks to Kate for the readings taken from the monthly magazine to do with the Chiltern Society and the WI pieces. So from both of us here, it's goodbye.